Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and for those of you that have been listening, sending in questions and comments, thank you so much, and please continue to help spread the word that every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, this show will bring on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases entertain, while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. Now, I would really appreciate a favor from all of you. Please forward one of our shows to your social media group or to someone you know that can benefit from a particular show. This is one powerful way we, together, can make a positive influence on the world. Now, Answers for the Family will continue to address a variety of issues, such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and creating greater health, happiness for you and your family. And we will introduce you to talented authors and new innovations in the areas of health, security, and fun for you and your family. Now, in our topic today, we're going to talk a little bit about mental health. Now, our guest's new book is The Book of Joshua. It's a deep look into the lives of youth suffering from mental illness. Now, adolescence isn't an easy time for the parents either. And as children move through the various transitions that accompany adolescence, the pressures and problems they encounter, they can all too easily seem overwhelming. Now, for many teenagers, these and other pressures can lead to one or more of a variety of mental health disorders. All are matters of concern, and some are life-threatening. Now, our guest brings you into the lives of those who suffer from mental illness in her book, The Book of Joshua. Now, with us is multi-genre author Jennifer Ann Moses, whose many books include Tales from My Closet, Visiting Hours, and Bagels and Grits. Her journalism and essays have appeared frequently in Time Magazine, The New York Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, USA Today, and many other publications. So, Jennifer, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you. You made me sound like such an important person. I love this.
Well, you are, and you have addressed an incredibly important issue. It's one that I've now spoken about for many, many years. And unfortunately, it's on the it's increasing rather than being on the decline like it should be. Mm-hmm. So I think to start off with, for those that haven't had a chance to read the book and such, you know, it opens up with an 18-year-old Joshua Cushing waking up in a psych mm-hmm. ward, not knowing how he got there. So,
in correct,
you intimately convey in this book the challenge of living with mental illness. What inspired you to write this book on such a challenging subject?
Yeah, people do want to know. So, as you know, the book is a novel. It's not a scientific or medical look at mental illness, but I did write the story about Joshua, my character Joshua Cushing, who, as you just said, when the book opens, he's waking up in a psych ward. He doesn't really know where he is. He doesn't know how he got there. He doesn't know who he is, and he also doesn't know why he has a giant wad of gauze over one of his eyes. He quickly learns as he comes to consciousness that the reason he's bandaged is because he only has one eye. He lost an eye. He does not know what happened to him. He's lost time, and he's lost himself, and he's lost. He's lost. As the book unfurls, and he has to go back home to his suburban home in New Jersey, and resume some kind of normal teenage life in high school, he gradually recovers his memory and his sense of who he is, and that's his journey. But that is fiction.
Right.
I did write a character who is grappling with a severe mental illness, in his case, schizophrenia, and coming to terms with that, what that means for himself, and also coming to terms for what that means to his family, who have watched him disintegrate and not been able to put pieces back together. So the whole book is his journey of self-discovery and remaking himself as a new creature, a creature who has to be reborn out of this shattered former self. So where that came from in me is, other than the fact that I have raised three of my own children, which makes you kind of a complete, like, I mean, I kind of felt a little psychotic during some of those years, but myself, and watching them go through adolescence, they're all past college now. I've got three grown children. But I, when I look back on my own high school years, I think, you know, there isn't a kid that age who isn't completely off his nut anyway, just in a normal way. But what happened for me in the Book of Joshua is that when I was in high school, I had my first very short-lived romance. It was actually a summer romance with a boy I met at a summer program that my parents had sent me to. When I was 16, he was 16, and no, we were 17. We were going into our last year of high school, and we had a summer romance, and lovely and sweet and handsome and so forth and so on. And when the summer was over, he went back to Los Angeles, where he lived, and I went back to Virginia, where I lived. We kept up a correspondence in those days. It was letters,
mm-hmm.
with, like, stamps, you know, pens. Remember those things?
Oh, yes.
What's that? You're like, you think, what is that?
Mm-hmm.
That's mail. And we resumed our friendship. It turned into a friendship when we both landed in the East, on campuses, different campuses on the East Coast. And we'd visit back and forth as friends. And he, during those early years, first couple of years of college, he went from this sunny, gorgeous boy, the boy kind of slated for the golden future, the boy out of the movie, to becoming dark and paranoid and weird and bursting into tears and having weird fascinations with, I mean, he was going down the tubes. He started kind of semi-stalking me. I wasn't in any danger, but it was like weird stuff going on. I didn't have the experience or knowledge or know-how or anything to know what was going on or to get help for myself or for him. It wasn't my place, of course, to get help for him, but I just didn't even know where to begin to do or not do regarding him. It really wasn't my issue. We were 200 miles apart, our campuses.
Right.
And then my mother was friendly with his mother, and she called me to tell me that there was bad news about my friend Danny,
mm-hmm.
that he had gone into New York City. He went to Princeton, so he wasn't too far from New York. He'd gone into New York one weekend and checked himself into a Y, where he poked out his own eye with, I don't know if it was a bedstead, a metal poker. He was delusional. He thought he was Jesus, and that the world needed a blood sacrifice. So this story has kind of stayed with me and haunted me for years. And then, but he recovered. He recovered his wounds. He finished college. He got a graduate degree. He moved to Los Angeles, back home to where his family was. Life went on. I didn't think much about him. By this time, I'm married and have three little children. And I'm in my own psychotic years, as it were. And by this time, I was living in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, with my husband and our three children. And the phone rings. It's my mother again. my mother, my late mother, loved to be the bearer of bad news, and she called and said, "Are you sitting down?" "What, Mom?" She says that Danny had committed suicide.
Mm.
He killed himself very spectacularly, very publicly. And every year on his birthday since then, since Danny's suicide, more than 20 years ago, his mother called me every day on his birthday. And then she herself died of cancer of natural causes. She was not a young woman, well into her 80s, I believe, by this time. But this this whole business with my friend, who had been my friend, but really a friend of my early youth, I mean, college. We haven't been friends since college. I'm almost 60, so, you know, you can do the math there. It just, this story just kind of seeped into my bones. And I felt that I had to find a way to tell it. And I don't even know why. I don't know why I took on this story. It's not my story. It's not. I have not been personally affected by profound mental illness of this nature. I have personally been affected by addiction, which is a kind of mental illness. The addiction has afflicted members of my family. That's a different, you know, yeah. It's a different animal. But so I know what I'm saying is I know what suffering is. I know what emotional suffering is because I myself have had it and plenty of it. But I've never lost my nut. And thank God my children and husband are all sound as well.
Well, one of the things that I got from reading the book was there's like an incredible grasp of the emotion of it, you know, of going through these things. And, you know, and it's interesting because I really had expected that there was a different level of research, that it wasn't going to be as focused on one particular thing, that it was going to be having researched, 10,000 different aspects of mental health and all of these things. But it doesn't come off, clinical at all. I mean, it's very emotional. And I really think that it's something that a lot of people either have gone through or they know somebody who has gone through something like this.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I think mental illness is has been with us since, the human race, probably since the get-go. We now have medical ways to treat it, drug therapies and so forth. I'm not, as I said, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a scientist, so I can't speak to that other than I know that these therapies exist, which are probably better than, putting somebody in bedlam with 40 other insane, throwing them some rat burgers out again so they don't all die. But mental illness, we seem to have, I don't know if it's the age of Oprah where the stuff is out in the open in a way that it wasn't when I was a kid, or if mental illness and emotional illness is actually on the rise in our country. I don't have the statistics. I'm sure somebody, more than one somebody does. I will say that I think with, the internet. The internet makes people absolutely freaking crazy nuts. I mean, the internet has made the whole world completely nuts. I have very strong opinions about the internet. Now, like any advance in technology, of course, it has its benefits as well as its dangers. I remember reading not long ago that when the printing press was invented and European women became more literate, and women in particular began to read these strange new thing called a novel.
Mm-hmm.
The entire educated and priestly class across Europe completely flipped out.
Oh, yeah.
This is the end of civilizations, right? So with each, my only point is that with each great leap forward in our way of human way of communicating. The old guard, you know, gets scared, and so I'm now the old guard that sees dangers.
Well,
I do think the internet, like anything else, can be balanced and used properly. I'm sorry, saying?
No, I'm just going to say, well, I mean, there was a few things, but one of which is you bring up a good point, is that there was a time in which there were storytellers because there wasn't reading. So the
right.
value of the storyteller was incredible. I mean, and so now you're taking away those people's value when you now have books and people can go and do this on their own. So, you know, then
well, it was also the power of the church that was being.
Oh, definitely.
Right?
That's,
you know, if you're not
that's
just
a whole
reading
other
the Bible,
story.
Right?
Yes.
Then you might be coming out of the thumb of the clergy.
Yes, that's
but, right. No. I think that's right. But if novel reading may have taken human beings away from the village square, as it were, the internet, computers, screens in general do that even more. Now, we all know, all of us who read a newspaper or listen to the news one way or another know that when you have these massive disasters, I'm talking about the high school shootings, some, you know, a nut with a gun, it's a sure thing that the nut with the gun has been reading conspiracy theories and all kinds of complete nonsense and crazy stuff on the internet. We know that.
Yep.
And that the crazy is regular human contact. Those two things are always at play. The murderer is always not only a white man, but is always an isolated, alienated, terrified internet junkie who can get a gun. So isolation is something that formerly in our society ate away, I think, more at elderly people who couldn't get out.
Mm-hmm.
But with the internet, it the internet lets us stay in our little hidey holes behind our screen and not communicate with each other on a heart-to-heart, on a human level, where I actually just wrote an op-ed piece that appeared in USA Today on Saturday about the age, what I call the age of braggadocio, how everybody who has Facebook or any other social media can pump themselves up as a product. You commodify yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Because God forbid we're only human. And it really, you know, my grandmothers, for example, who were both educated women, both raised three children, they both married men who supported them in style. Neither one of them had to earn a living, but neither one of them stayed home, and they didn't have TV to hide behind. They both rolled up their sleeves, and in both their cases, they did a lot of volunteer work and work in the Jewish community. Where I'm Jewish, they were Jewish. So it was that involvement with their own synagogues and in their own communities, and that connection was you know, only connect, right? It was,
mm-hmm.
was that big part of their lives. And they didn't live to entertain themselves. That's something that they wouldn't have even occurred to them. When I meet people who are new in town, I live in New Jersey, and they're a little lonely. They haven't met people. I'm like, well, do you belong to a church? Well, no, I don't believe in God. Well, so what? You know, what does that have to do
yeah,
with it?
Yeah, you're right. It's part of socializing. We are social creatures, and be it the church or whatever else it is that you're involved in, you know. And I've told people that have talked about loneliness and stuff is that, you know, you can go online and type in whatever it is that you're interested in. If you want to be kite surfing, you know, or if you mm-hmm. want to be mountain climbing, or, you know, mm-hmm. whatever it is that you want, if you want to join a theatric group in your local area, there's going to be mm-hmm. something. You know, right now there's mm-hmm. there's something called Nextdoor. You can go on Nextdoor and say, I've just moved into the area, I'm looking for a good
right.
book club. And
right.
and somebody just did this. I just read this on Nextdoor over the weekend,
mm-hmm.
And four or five people came in and said, hey, we've got a really good book club. We focus on mystery. Another person came on and said, hey, look, you know, we've got one that meets on Fridays, and it's a little bit broader. We go into a lot of different things. And but I thought, you know, this is a positive way in which we can use the internet to continue to be social creatures and meet people that are doing the things that we're interested in. And I would rather have them do that than sit home, watch television, especially. I've got a whole issue on that as far as, you know, the media's push to be as negative as possible and to keep people in high anxiety. So
Well, of course. Well, even if it doesn't keep you in anxiety, there are all kinds of, you know, there's a study that was done, I don't know, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, that showed that for teenage girls and girls in their 20s, young women, five minutes with it after opening up any fashion magazine, like depression hit. Because you're looking at these idealized images
that have been photoshopped.
And it makes you feel like junk, you know, you feel like you're not good enough. It live theater is different because you're looking at actual human beings. So you're getting that chemical, natural buzz. Not like you're getting high, but you're getting it's a natural environment, and is what I'm saying. The theater, as theatrical and artificial as it is, it's still human-sized humans on a stage. It's not a 10-foot-tall, you know,
monster
face of a movie star or monster. So So it's all in moderation, as you say, and the internet can be used. I mean, my belief is it's all moderation, and if you use the internet I use email all the time. I love email because it means I can just write a letter online. I don't have to get a stamp, and I can get a reply within 5 minutes. But I know when I spend too much time doodling around on my Facebook, I just kind of feel yuck. You know, I feel yucky. I just feel yucky, yucky. I used to feel that way when I was a kid growing up. We were isolated, actually. We grew up sort of out in the woods. Didn't really have any neighbors, and we'd get bored. And we would watch, you know, like Saturday morning cartoons. I remember even now, all these years later, that feeling of like having the cartoons, the TV suck me in, suck me towards the screen. And then when the cartoon lineup was over, I kind of felt limp, like there was no oomph left inside my little 11, you know, 10 or 8-year-old body. Everything seemed dreary and dull. And that was just from watching whatever, Bugs Bunny. But it would be 2 hours of it. And my mom would say, go out and play. And like, that seems so dull in comparison to the hijinks of Flintstones or whatever I was watching. And I think there's a very common human response to screen media, in particular, just zaps us. I mean, it is, you know, the writer David Foster Wallace, who killed himself, 6-7 years ago? I might have that wrong. He's a brilliant novelist, struggled with manifold addictions. But the addiction he talked about the most was his television addiction. That was the addiction that he himself identified as the one with the greatest hold over him. And I think that's probably something that afflicts countless of our fellow citizens.
Well, which takes us right back to one of the best things that you can do to get over that television addiction is pick up a book.
Turn it off. Turn it off.
Well, turn it off, yes. But at the same time, pick up a book, because if you're going to pick up a book, now your mind is getting involved in it. Now, to me, some of the best books written are things to where our mind is now creating what we believe, you know, so that it's, you know, we can all have a little different view. You know, while we're reading a book, I might see something differently than the next person. And and in fact, I had a client who a mother of a young man who we took to a mental health facility, and and she gets the press release that we send out in regards to who's going to be on the show, and she went, she said, you know, she goes, you know, I remember always being told that everybody has a book in them. She goes, I can't wait to get this book because I want to understand more about my own son. And then she added, and she said, and who knows? She goes, I want to kind of learn the nuts and bolts of this because I may want to write my own book because of what my view has been as a parent who has gone through this with their own son. So with that said, what were some of the specific challenges that you came in writing this book? Now, I know that you've written in different genres. Were there certain challenges you found in this one that maybe you didn't when writing in a different genre?
This book was just, I'll put it this way, it took me about 10 years to get this book down. I wrote draft after draft after draft of this book. When I write, I'm not sort of thinking, it's not like a school paper where you need to make the arguments cohere. It's more an emotional state. It's more like my guts know whether or not I'm writing a story. I'm not writing an argument. I'm not making one point flow to the next point as I would in, for example, an op-ed essay. So my brain almost has nothing to do with it. It's like when I'm writing fiction, my brain is my stomach. It's not in my head. And so for this, it was, am I getting the story right? Am I capturing this character, Joshua? Because as you know from having read the book, Joshua, like, is in a terrible place. I mean, like, this is the worst thing in the world. Nobody would want what happens to my Joshua to happen to his or her child. You know, you wouldn't wish it on Hitler's son had he had a son, right? You wouldn't wish that on anyone. That says so. When he starts off in the book, just in a terrible place, but he's wickedly funny. He's wickedly funny because all the kind of nonsense and the pretty words, and he doesn't believe it anymore. He doesn't believe all the stories he's been told by adults about how life works. He punctures right through that with his own cuckoo brain. And he also he has to go back to high school. He was supposed to have graduated, but instead he's been off in having schizophrenic breaks and doing, he doesn't know what at the beginning of the book. He goes back to his senior in high school. He has to repeat that, which would for most teenagers be a reason to go off. You're not all by itself.
Yeah.
And now he's in the class with his little brother. He and his brother are both seniors together, which is miserable for him. And he'd been a star athlete, he'd been a runner, and now he's enormously fat. He's all blown up from the meds and from he doesn't know what. And he has to see a psychiatrist, of course, and he has to go to the support group, which he kind of hates because of the blah, blah, blah that he hears in the support group. He doesn't believe it. He's pretty much given up on ever losing his virginity. He's a nice boy, so he hasn't so far. He does not know what's happened to his girlfriend, who he believes is the love of his life, which actually, as we older people know, does happen in high school, that you do meet the love of your life and marry him or her. I have several high school classmates who married their high school sweethearts and have been happily together all these years. Wouldn't have happened to me, but there you go. So Joshua's assuming that this love of his life, Sophie, is the one. And she's disappeared along with his memory and his eye. She seems to have been wiped off the map. His parents won't tell him what happened. His brother won't tell him what happened. Nobody will tell him. They say they don't know. He doesn't know if they're lying or not. He senses that there's something they're not telling him, but he doesn't. He really doesn't know. And then he gets a lucky break and meets the only other new kid in his class, a girl who he thinks is stalking him. She's quite kind of scrappy and little and reminds him of kind of like a rodent or something. She's no beauty. She's weird. She has a scar on her face. And she keeps kind of, he thinks she's stalking him. She thinks he's stalking her. They end up being great pals. And it's through this real love that the two of them establish, loving friendship. There's no romance between them. But he is eventually restored to himself through this wonderful, true friendship. And I was able to write that friendship and treat that character of Elizabeth, the friend, I think just out of my own experience with friendships, with, again, going back to connection, human-to-human connection, when you establish that real joy in a friendship with another human being, that kind of spark of life is such a gift. Mm-hmm. It's such a gift, and it's freeing. And so it's the two of them, it's through his relationship with another human being who he completely trusts, that he, bit by bit, is able to look at himself and understand who he is post-psychotic break.
Well, let's not give away too much. For anybody,
I'm not giving away anything.
I know, but we're getting close. For anybody that wants to get the book, where's the best place for them to get it?
Probably just online. After I've been saying, don't go online, probably the easiest way to get it is on Amazon or Barnes and Noble. Yeah, the Book of Joshua, which is not a biblical. I mean, my Book of Joshua is not the Book of Joshua in the Bible.
Right. So it won't be in the religious section. So
no religious section. Yes. It's definitely a novel.
All right. Yeah. Well, we're going to take a break. So for everybody out there, stay with us. We will be right back. You are listening to Answers for the Family.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585. Or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. And we are coming up on the holidays, and we have a very, very special show coming up on December 31st. December 31st. Gabriella Von Rey will be in here, and for those of you that have listened to the show, you know that she has been a guest host, a guest co-host, and a guest. So she is on a world tour. It is called the Dare to Be Kind World Tour, and I'm so excited about what she's doing that we're going to talk about, as we go into 2019, we're going to talk about gratitude. We're going to talk about being kind. We're going to talk about literally everything that the mainstream media doesn't want to talk about. We're going to talk about it. So, and for our Christmas show, we're going to have, it'll be a repeat, but it is one to where we talk about holiday skits. It's Cornell Christensen, who we have, it's sort of become our sort of annual Christmas show. It's an incredible show. You know, when you get halfway through it, if you haven't heard it, there's a little surprise that you find out some things about Cornell that most people wouldn't have anticipated. So again, it's a great show for any holiday, but especially for Christmas and the Christmas season. Now, we are talking about the Book of Joshua. And we're going into a story that it resonates so accurately to what many people are going through when they're suffering from mental illness. And in many cases, I know that those of you that have listened, you know, you expect to hear things. We're talking about documentaries from, you know, famous doctors who have done, you know, incredible amount of research and stuff. This is a novel, but again, it resonates so true that I really think that it's a good read for, you know, just it's a good read. It has a level of a suspense to it, in the sense, as you learn more, as the main character learns more about their own life, you follow along. And in fact, I was going to ask Jennifer, while I was reading it, one of the thoughts that came to my mind was, so has anybody approached you to buy the movie rights yet?
Ah, say that really loud over and over, and maybe somebody will.
Okay, so we're in Los Angeles, so
right.
But we have listeners throughout the world.
Right.
You know, as I was reading this, and for those that don't know, I've actually produced four movies, but as I was reading this, that was one of the thoughts that came to mind, was who has the, you know, the movie rights to this, because it's written very much like a movie script, in the way in which you gain more information as you're going along. So it makes for an incredibly interesting read, but also you feel like you're learning more about what people deal with when they're dealing with schizophrenia. So
yeah, it is. I mean, it is sort of, it does fall into that five-act feel. I don't think in five acts the way screenwriters do. I only know about that because I lived in L.A. for a year, a long time ago. So I learned that was the basic way screenwriters think, the first structure. And the book also does have a lot of dialogue, of course. But, yeah, I mean, I would love the novel to be turned into a movie, for all the reasons that every writer hopes, mm-hmm. prays, and, you know, whines to the god of his or her understanding, please give me a movie deal. But it does tell the story of Joshua from the inside out. I don't know what else to say about that. As you were talking, I was thinking the book is a bit of a mystery. It's sort of a page turner that way, because you want to find out what the heck happened. Mm-hmm. He wants to find out. That's what's driving Joshua, but the reader wants to find out too. Now, that said, I have never really read genre work at all, which is to say, I've never read crime or fantasy or sci-fi. I mean, a little here, a little there, but very little. I've pretty much stuck all my life to literary fiction and nonfiction. And for the first time in my life, literally, I read two back-to-back crime novels, one by Gillian Flynn. Is it Gillian or Gillian? I read Sharp Objects. And the other by the Irish writer, I can't think of her name. She's very famous. Oh, Tana French. Mm-hmm. And that's when I realized, I mean, they're uncovering a mystery. You have a mystery that needs to be solved, in this case, sort of by the cops, by the investigative police. But my mystery, Joshua's mystery, needs to be solved by Joshua. And I'm Joshua. I mean, I created him. I'm all the characters in that book, as I think any fiction writer would claim about his or her characters. You know, Tolstoy was Anna Karenina, Shakespeare was Falstaff, and so forth. And not that I'm either Tolstoy or Shakespeare, but that's who popped into my mind. So I am Joshua, and of course Joshua is a biblical character, and his task is to bring the walls of Jericho down. So my Joshua's task is to bring the walls of Joshua down to see what's inside. And I think that's really sort of the human task for all of us here on Earth, to find out what's inside our own walls, for whatever that's worth. That's my own take on my own journey on Earth.
Okay. Well, what do you see as next for you? You know, again, you've kind of gone into different genres. Which one do you get into and you go, okay, this feels like home?
It depends what I'm working on. When I was starting out in my career, I worked at Mademoiselle magazine, the now-defunct Mademoiselle magazine in New York City. I was, you know, the bottom of the ladder there. I was really, really bad at my job. I just was terrible at it. I just didn't get it. And I thought I was so smart because I read, you know, I'd read everything. I was so intellectual and so forth and so on. And I just stunk at my job. But that said, I had pictured my whole life being played out in New York City, where I would eventually become a beloved literary figure and, you know, smoke French cigarettes and have an enormous apartment on the Upper West Side, so forth and so on, which is not really how it turned out at all. I lived in Baton Rouge, Louisiana for many years. I've lived in Scotland. I lived in Washington, D.C. Any place else? Yes, I now... Oh, I lived in L.A., and I now live in the New Jersey suburbs, which if somebody had told me when I was in my early 20s that I'd be a Jewish housewife in the New Jersey suburbs who spends a lot of time volunteering at the synagogue, I would have killed myself. But because I've moved around so much, in large part because I've moved around so much, I've had to adjust my what I do to suit my surroundings. I haven't, until we moved back to New Jersey, lived in a place that even had a newspaper to work right for. So I evolved as this sort of multi-genre writer. I write fiction and nonfiction. I also paint, like, a lot. I paint. In fact, my paintings are on my website, and people who see the paintings and have not met me or read my work think I'm a elderly black Southern Christian woman from the way I paint. So where all this comes from, I couldn't tell you. It was sort of inborn in me. And I try to, I don't know what the next big thing will be for me. I am working on an adult novel now. I'm close to finishing up a workable draft, and it's extremely different from the novel we're talking about, the Book of Joshua. It's a different kind of challenge.
Now, you just mentioned your website. Share with us, share with our listeners what the website is for those that want to check that out.
Yeah, it's my name, actually. It's www.JenniferAnnMosesArts, and it's got a lot of my stuff up, not everything. My husband's always bugging me that I need to have a more professional looking website. I'm like, I don't know about that. I think the only person who visits is me. So I'm not sure I need to entertain myself any more than I already do with it.
All right. Well, but okay. So for those that are out there, you know, we're talking about, you know, people don't want to be lonely. Well, she doesn't want to be the only one visiting her website. So let's go visit it. Okay. All right. So again, so it's Jennifer Ann with an E on the end, Moses Arts, ARTS.com.
Yeah. That's okay. It. Basically, if you Google my name, all this stuff pops up all over the place. I'm all over the net.
All right. And for those of you, if you're driving, you know, don't try to write this down. Just go to the Answers for the Family website, and we have, you can connect that way, that we have links that you can connect directly to Jennifer. Jennifer, we've got a couple of listener questions. I want to get those in before we run out of time. Questions. One is a comment. This one reads, I was so curious about where the story was going, I just had to buy it on Kindle, and this book did not disappoint. I am a counselor at a therapeutic facility in Utah, and I frequently have time to read in the evenings. It is so amazing to have teens arrive here so full of fear and who have isolated themselves from others. Seeing them open up and make bonds, which in turn helps them pull each other through the program to success, is very rewarding. This is the kind of book that needs more attention, as it really hits home with these kids and what they are going through. And that's from Joe in Utah.
Well, thank you, Joan Utah. I mean, I think, again, that she or he hit what we've been talking about, which is isolation is sort of the enemy of mental and emotional and spiritual health for anybody. Mm-hmm. You don't have to have particular issues for isolation to gnaw you down and to, you know, make you miserable. And while good psychiatric care is optimal, what we all need always is connection with our fellow human beings, with knowing that we're not alone, that there are many people are going through exactly what we're going through, no matter what it is. I mean, there's been so much shame around mental illness, and that is corrosive. That's corrosive. You know, there's an old saying in AA circles, death circles, which is, our secrets keep us sick. Mm-hmm. So for an alcoholic to finally go and say hello, you know, my name is whoever I am. Mm-hmm. my name is Bella, and I'm an alcoholic. And everyone says, "Hi, Bella," like, no biggie.
Right.
All of a sudden, you're with like a lot of people who going through exactly what you're going through. Oh, my problems are human. Yep. I'm not Satan. I'm not evil. I'm just flawed. So, and I'm hurting. And being hurting and being flawed are manageable. And there's help for that, and there's comfort, and there's a way to help. But if we sit at home behind our computers, or just sit at home in fear, we're not going to be able to reach that love. That love is the medicine.
Definitely. We have another comment that has come in from a listener. This one reads, "I too believe that family secrets, especially physical or sexual abuse as a child, mm-hmm. greatly affects one's emotional maturity as we move into adulthood. I internalize so many traumatic events that it wasn't until I hit my 40s that I was forced to get professional help to save my marriage. Mm-hmm. Once I was able mm-hmm. to face my own demons, everyone in my family began to change around me. Healing always mm-hmm. starts with the person who is denying it the most."
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that happens. Sometimes what I think it is, the person who's hurt the most in a family, who seems the most damaged, is the one who gets the help first, because they can't go on living
right.
like that. But right, of course, I mean, when there's denial in the family system, everyone in that family is going to go crazy nuts. I mean, it's a terrible thing. Everybody's affected. Everybody suffers. Right. When there's, again, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a therapist, I'm not a teacher, I'm none of those things. I'm a mom, not even yet a grandmom, and my active days of momming are over, and my active days of grandmomming haven't started, since I don't have any grandkids. But with abuse, sexual abuse, God forbid, physical violence, or just, you know, it's called boundary issue abuse, which isn't mm-hmm. out and out sexual abuse, but it's like icky stuff that happens where a child's boundaries aren't respected. So there might be like a brother watching a sister shower, nobody's doing that, or a parent who doesn't know it's okay to kind of walk around half naked, or too much sharing of parents. You know, a mom who might lean too much on a daughter, telling her all the crap between her and the husband, sorry for the four-letter word, and okay. boundary violations where the child's integrity isn't upheld in the family system. That can mess a person up really badly, too. That's something we don't talk about much. Thank God that sexual abuse is something that's sort of on the table now, since it is so horrifically, horrifically widespread. In our society, and I suspect in other societies too, but that's a violation that I think that's a terrible wound that needs to be aired and aired and aired.
Yes,
and educated with love and understanding.
Absolutely, and it's actually something we have done shows about, and you're absolutely mm-hmm. right. We're talking with Jennifer Ann Moses. The book is called The Book of Joshua. If you get a chance, check it out. Jennifer, we've run out of time, but thank you so much. I appreciate you coming on and sharing this, and I appreciate you writing the book, and keep us posted when the next one comes out.
I will. Thank you. Enjoy your California sunshine.
We will. Thank you.
All right.
So for everybody out there, thank you so much for listening. And as I mentioned a little bit at the midway break, we talked a little bit about the Dare to Be Kind World Tour. And I told you that I'd give you a little more information. Well, It is something that you can all get involved in. So it's very simple and yet wonderful at the same time. So for instance, the top three goals, just help one person a day. Okay, that's all you need to do is help one person a day. We're going to be gathering footage for the Dare to Be Kind TV show that will show associations doing a stellar job in their communities, as well as people who have taken up the challenge of one act of kindness within a 2-mile radius. And the third thing you can do is show how kindness can be used to create safer communities and healthier relationships through assemblies, talks, and keynotes at schools, universities, colleges, and corporations. That's what Gabrielle is doing on this world tour. She is taking a couple of years out of her life to continue to spread the word, and we're going to be talking about that. So I won't try to give you everything now. Just know that you can go to the daretobekindmovement.com and learn more information. You can go to Dare to Be Kind on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram. You can get involved. This is something, this is a movement. This is something that we can all get involved in, and we can all make a positive difference. We're starting that. She's already started that, but we're going to bring it on this show, and we're going to be talking about it more 2 weeks from now. So you can be with us again next week when we will be having, as I said, we're going to talk about holiday skits, which is great fun for kids of all ages. That's a book written by writer-producer Cornell Christensen. So for everybody out there, I want to wish you a Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays to all, be good human beings, go out there and do something every day. Show an act of kindness. It will grow. We will make a difference. So be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers for the Family.